Florida State versus Pitt. Can the Seminoles get off a slide and get back into the win column this Saturday? This is the big one, Michael. This is, you know, we talk about must-win games all the time, and every game for every team in the country is a must-win game. But for Florida State on this Saturday, this is a can't-lose game. You cannot afford to lose this one. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to go back and take a quick look at what we saw in Miami now that we've had time to watch the film. I wish we'd had time to do a film review on that game, but just with the travel back home from being in Doak on Saturday, it just wasn't possible. But we're going to share some thoughts. Was it better than we thought? Was it worse than we thought? Was it exactly what we thought? And can Florida State get that win on Saturday? So what is up, Noel Nation? Obviously, as you know, I'm Jesse. That's Michael. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Michael, it's another Saturday coming up. Florida State needs a win in the worst way. But before we jump into this, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me for another episode.
Thanks for having me, Jesse. Yeah, you know, Florida State's kind of at a fork in the road with this game this weekend. They've kind of backed themselves into a 3-2 record. And, you know, this is kind of where, in a lot of ways, we predicted they could potentially be at this 5-game juncture. But now, man, all the eyeballs are on this weekend. You know, can they stop the skid? Can they get back to their winning ways? Can Tommy stop turning over the ball? Can the defense figure out their assignments and alignments, right? All those things, right? Can that all come together against what is looking to be a pretty compelling Pitt team? And we're going to get into all of that.
Yeah, Pitt is always a tough out. So you have got to bring your lunch on a day you're playing them. But before we get into this, Michael, I do want to give a quick shout out to our listeners. Our friend in Doak that sits right by us says he's been listening to the show. So I want to give him a shout out. I actually had someone come up to me on Saturday at the Miami game when we were tailgating that said he recognized my voice. He heard it from across the parking lot or whatever and was like, I'm loud so you can hear me anywhere. That was pretty cool there as well. And then we had some guys that were at the Virginia tailgate that showed up to this tailgate as well. Our tribe member, Kate, showed up as well, her and her family. So that we really appreciate that. Just want to give a shout out to you guys because, again, the show doesn't work without you guys. So we really appreciate that as well. And so, again, man, if you want to keep up to date with all the content that we're dropping, hit that like and subscribe button. Hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. And if you would like to join the channel to support what we're doing here, you can do that for $5 a month there at the Join the Tribe members. Now, if you think you're subscribed and you're not, just check. Maybe you are or maybe you're not and you think you are. Grab your friend's phone. Grab your neighbor's phone. Hit subscribe on theirs too. Just kind of help us grow here. We're pushing for 3,000. We're almost there. Appreciate you guys for helping support us. Michael, before we jump into this, a couple of quick updates. Some bad news out of Florida State. Quindarius Jones, cornerback, is out for the season. He sustained an injury against Miami that Mike Norvell said is going to have surgery. And then you also lose B.J. Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, it's about time for fall ball to start up with baseball. Yep. He's just not really getting on the field, and he is a really good baseball player. So I think this is a smart business decision for him. But at the end of the day, those are two guys that one is no longer with the football program and one is out for the rest of the season. So obviously first thing, prayers up to Q there for a speedy recovery. Absolutely. They didn't say what the injury was, but hopefully it's something that he can get cleaned up and be back for next season. Man, quick bit of just interesting thing I saw on social media. Did you see Stanford's getting a $50 million donation for football? Spanx lady, what are we doing? Come on. Like, we need somebody. We need somebody to drop a $50 million donation on us.
Be nice.
I don't necessarily mean that's for the buyout. We could use that for NIL. and also, man, there's some rumblings that Bill Belichick's getting ready to get fired at UNC.
Well, that's what I heard, too.
The Hulu documentary is gone, and he might be going with it. So some interesting stuff in college football, man. But I think the first place I want to start talking about this Pitt game is let's just take a quick look back to Miami, right? We both had a chance now to sit down and watch the film and kind of see, do we feel better or different on this game? And I think when you go back and rewatch it, it is different than the initial thought, right? Sometimes I say this anyway, for me personally, sometimes it can be hard to judge a game when you're in the stadium, you're in the moment, you can't sit there and rewind the plays and stuff like that. I don't think it changes a lot to where I don't think you were very competitive at all until the fourth quarter. Like that did not change. That narrative did not change. But I think how this game played out was a little different than we initially talked about on the instant reaction. First off, I don't buy that Miami played a full-on prevent defense in the fourth quarter. They were still blitzing. Bain and Mezzador were still in the game. They may have taken their foot off the gas offensively to a degree, but I really think when you look at it, I think Florida State just finally settled in and finally started to play, and some things worked out. And we'll talk about that here in just a second. One of the things that were obvious in this, right? Miami does in certain positions have a talent edge, and that was just clear, right? They've recruited better than you. They have a little bit bigger NIL budget to spend on certain pieces than you. We don't have a Bane or a Mesidor, period. Right. You just don't. Now, 2 years ago, they didn't have a Fisk and a Verse, right? So these things do change. They go up and down. So this year, they just had some better cards in the deck. And so that was the one thing that did stand out. But, man, we'll talk a little offense and defense, but just give me some overall thoughts when you went back and watched the film of what maybe changed in your mind after you watched this game.
I would agree with your assessment as well too, of like, you know, I thought maybe that, oh, you know, Miami just kind of really backed off towards the end and that's why we were able to score. No, I saw a defense that was still very much engaged. They're still blitzing that safety down, bringing the safety down to as a fifth person on the line there. They tried to, you know, surprise that. You saw that all the way throughout the game. They weren't giving up, you know, they weren't just playing, you know, prevent defense going backwards. Mm-hmm. They were actually trying to attack the offense. And like you said, I felt like they finally settled down. I felt like Tommy finally started to take what the defense was giving him and not try to make the hero play. And I think that's a big part of it. Honestly, if you want to know after watching the film, what I feel like Florida State could have won that game. I really do. After watching the film, I feel like Florida State could have won that game. If you go back and you look at the two interceptions by Tommy, both of them just ill-advised. I would not have thrown them. The one that was on 4th and 8 is a big one. I mean, it's the same play that we ran against Alabama where he hit Squirrel White. Okay, except instead of hitting the outside route, he throws the seam route to Randy Pittman. The problem is he throws the ball too late. He throws it too late. The pocket was clean. He could have stood in that pocket, maybe moved just a little bit, and threw a great ball. If he throws that ball on time, Randy Pittman is walking in the end zone scot-free on 4th and 8. It should have scored a touchdown, but Tommy throws it late. There were times where Tommy ran out of the pocket, and we're not sure if it was a called design run or if it's just him running, but it was a clean pocket where he didn't have to run. And of course, when he ran, then, you know, the defender was able to come and do their thing. I mean, they're on the other side of that 4th and 8 play. Let's say you don't hit that play. You have Gavin Sawchuk standing 8 yards down the field, wide open. He literally catches the ball, turns around, takes 2 steps before a defender will even touch him. He's got the first down immediately. The throw to Squirrel White, that's an interception. That's an ill-advised throw. He's covered because you throw it late. So you think of some of those things. You look at the offensive line. Initially, I thought, based on the PFF grades we talked about, they had the worst game of their lifetime. But then when I actually went back and watched the film, I would say of the 31 pressures they were credited with, there was about 10 that were actual real pressures. Not everything was actual real pressure. So overall, my overall thought is I really felt like Florida State could have won this game. Not blown out, but they could have won. This could have been a fourth quarter game with Florida State having the opportunity to win.
Yeah. It's difficult because I don't think we definitely didn't play well enough to win, but I get what you're saying. I think the opportunities presented themselves for Florida State to win that game. A lot of the stuff was there. You just didn't get the job done. Right. And so, right. As they say, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, right? Close doesn't count in football games, but there were things there. You just didn't take advantage of the opportunity. So I'm going to back it up a little bit because I wasn't going to quite get into offense and defense yet, but we'll do that now. So I do think the first drive was what it was supposed to look like, right? 11 plays, 70 yards. You drove right down the field. You got screwed on a terrible missed PI call on Deuce in the end zone. And I really think that could have changed the momentum of the game, at least, right? It would have been 1st and goal at the 3. Now it's 3rd and goal at the 6. You settle for a field goal. You get down in an early hole. If you score a touchdown there, I think it maybe does change the momentum of the game for sure. I think the problem is, though, as we've seen in the past with Mike Norvell at times, and I know he's not the offensive coordinator, once that scripted drive is over, things just kind of don't look as clean, right? 70 plays on the first drive, 42 rush yards. The next 5 drives in the first half, you had 111 total yards and only 43 rush yards. So once that scripted drive was over, you just kind of struggled to put it together. But I do think you make a good point. When you talk about the offense, I put more of this game on Tommy than I do the offensive line, right? There were, I think he, like we talked about with Ty Simpson in Alabama, I think he was seeing ghosts, right? There was times where he just, first off, it looked like he was pressing for the first three quarters. He was trying too hard. You know, one thing he talked about early in the season before, in the preseason was how, well, you know, when I was at Boston College, I was pretty much the entire offense. But now I have weapons around me and I don't have to be the whole offense. It looked like early in this game, he was trying to be the whole offense. He did not trust his weapons. He did not trust his offensive line to give him an opportunity to make those plays with other guys around him. It looked like he was trying to do everything himself. His mechanics were flat out awful in this game. He was throwing off off platform. He did not really step into throws a lot. That's where you saw some balls that were short, hitting people in the feet, some balls that sailed on him that just wasn't really accurate. I think, man, he talked about training with Cam Ward in the offseason. It looks like he's almost trying to play that Cam Ward style football, but he just doesn't have the size or strength that Cam Ward does. But again, man, I do think when you look at it, there were throws that were off time. He ran it early a lot when he really didn't have to. He had a pocket he could have stepped up into. He didn't allow some plays to develop where if you just keep watching the film, it would have been there had he not have took off running or forced it to somebody else. So I want to say when you talk about Tommy, like, first off, he's not really a progression read quarterback, right? He reads what's there. He does what the play is supposed to do. And if it's not there, he takes off. Right. He had a really bad game. He apologized to the team after this game. So that's not a surprise, right? But I also want to say if it wasn't for Tommy's athletic ability, he saved your butt on a lot of plays. Like, I think if you'd had DJU back there, you probably get sacked 6 or 8 times. I mean, without a doubt, because Tommy does things that just not a lot of quarterbacks can do from an athletic standpoint. And really, when you look at the fourth quarter, I think he just finally settled down, man. He just didn't stop trying to do too much and use the weapons around him. And that's when you started see things click, which is what we've talked about in a couple of games this year, where he's trying to play hero ball. And you have to be able to settle in and not do that. I mean, how many times, Michael, did we see where he doesn't have the greatest arm, so he's not a great, super great deep ball thrower. But like you mentioned on the 4th and 8, I get that it was there for Randy. But Gavin is standing right in front of you with his heels on the first down line. Man, just there was no one within 8 yards of him. Just check it down and take the first down. But instead, he takes the hero shot, tries to go for the big play. He was 0-4 with 2 picks on throws for over 20 yards. He just has to learn to take what the defense gives you, and he'll be so much better. You have to stop trying to force everything downfield. And then the other thoughts I'll just give you on the offense real quick is I think when we came into this game or in the immediate reaction that there was a narrative, and maybe I bought into it as well, that this we had got whipped on the line of scrimmage. I don't think he got physically manhandled. I think there was a lot of missed alignments, missed communications, missed assignments. Like I always say, alignment and assignment is half of football. There were times where it's not that you got beat, but it was more like guys would just let a free rusher come by, and then your head's looking for someone to block. Well, the guy that you were supposed to block is already in the backfield. So, like, that's an assignment issue. That's not a physical issue. And Miami is a team, credit to them, to where they have good enough athletes and they are well enough coached that if you make mistakes, they're going to make you pay for them. So credit to Miami for that. Yeah. I also will say, I think with them having a bye week, they looked very much prepared for what you were going to do.
Oh yeah.
They did not fall for the reverse. They did not fall for the screens. They did not fall for a lot of your stuff. They knew what was coming. And so that's a big credit to them. But like I said, man, I don't think there were some instances where, yes, you did get whipped physically. It did happen. I'm not going to say it didn't. Right. But I don't think it was as bad as I thought from that part. I think a lot of it was technical or mental stuff. Yeah. The good thing is some of that can be fixed. The bad thing is it's already cost you 2 games. And it didn't look any better this week than it did last week. So will it actually get cleaned up before it costs you any other games? And then the last thing on the offense I have here is, man, losing Michael Pettis hurt, right? And Pettibon are your best offensive linemen out there. You had to slide Adrian Medley out the tackle, and it just wasn't working. But he's a guard. That's not his fault. He doesn't play offensive tackle. There's a big difference in those positions. That's Florida State's fault, right? It's Florida State's fault that you're 6 years into Mike Norvell's tenure and you don't have a single serviceable tackle that you feel confident putting out there. That's not his fault. You're shuffling guards. So that is kind of an indictment on the program more than anything. But there was pressure, but it wasn't, what did people say? Because they must have adjusted their numbers, the 41 right. pressures and 45 right. dropbacks.
Right.
I don't agree with that either. I think, yes, you're right. There was probably about 10 real pressures and probably about 20 more that Tommy created unnecessarily by himself. But again, I don't think when I watched it from the offensive line perspective, there were some times where you got pushed around a little bit, but most of this was just missed assignments, just guys not blocking the right guys, letting free rushers by, things like that, man. So that's stuff that can get cleaned up, but will it get cleaned up?
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, and those are things for Herb Hand and Gus Malzahn to look at from the offensive perspective. Like, you're right. I mean, there are multiple plays where you see a guy just like he starts out, you think he's going to block him, and then he goes there, and the guy, the DN's like, oh, okay. And he just like walks on through, and yeah. you're like, that must have
appreciate
been a
miss. It.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thanks for the open door invitation. That must have been a missed call that wasn't made along the line. Right. So that's yeah. not a skill. That's not a talent issue. That's an alignment issue. That's a call issue. That's a getting on the same page issue. And then those kinds of things you just can't have happen, especially against a team like Miami. Now, maybe you could forgive that against a Kent State or a East Texas A&M because, you know, you can make up for it. Tommy can make up for it. But when you're facing athletes like Reuben Bain and all those yeah. guys, you can't have mishaps like that. You can't have mental breakdowns to not make that call there. And honestly, let's be real. That call is on the center. That's on Luke Pettibon. Luke Pettibon should have made that call there. And so you look at that and you think, okay, if you get those things corrected, well, now Tommy doesn't feel like he's necessarily having to scramble. And then I would just go back to this thing about Tommy himself is this idea of hero ball. I don't know what Gus Malzahn and Mike Norvell and Tony Togras have to do, but somebody's gotta, I was about to say, beat it out of him. Don't hit the yeah. guy. But like, I don't know. Sit him in somewhere and just pound it in his head. He does not have to be the hero here. This right. is a way more talented team than Boston College. Take what the defense is giving you. Because if you do, Florida State would be undefeated right now. Yeah. Undefeated. If you just took what the defense gave you. Florida State has turned the ball over 6 times in the last 2 games. Now, it's not on Tommy. All on Tommy because the running backs have got to stop fumbling the dadgum Jeez, ball.
I know.
I mean, this is ridiculous, right? So if you took away those 3 turnovers, man, Florida State is – we're sitting here pretty right now. But that's yeah. what this offense has just – it has been a shell of itself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can see when you go back and watch film and you slow it down, there's plays there, right? Now that doesn't say that Miami didn't have a good game defensively. They weren't ready for it. That's a really daggone good defense,
right?
And they were very well prepared. They have got themselves a defensive coordinator. Hopefully, he gets a head coaching job very soon. But like you said, man, you can't leave an athlete like Reuben Bain or Akeem Mezidor unblocked. Like right. you can't whiff on that block because they will run you down from the backside. I don't care how fast Tommy is, you know, and I think a lot of that led to him pressing really hard. He thought he had to do too much. But again, there are some physical deficiencies there. Again, they had some great athletes on that side. There's some question marks there. There's some plays that just need to be made. But I think a lot of it, like we said, was more mental, more technical, more alignment and assignment type of stuff. Now, when you talk about the defense, I thought the defense did play a lot better this week, right? There are some truths when you talk about that. I thought the yeah. defensive line played yep. so much better than we saw last week at Virginia. The linebacker still can't cover, man. And the secondary right now is just an unmitigated disaster. We have guys that are playing the same gaps. We have guys that are, like, when you watch in coverage, there are 3 guys that are standing almost shoulder to shoulder and 20-yard gaps in the secondary. Like, what are we doing, right? I mean, when you sit there and watch some of the – but, you know, you go back, Michael, when you talk about blown coverages. We saw this against Alabama, right? You yeah. just did a better job yeah. of hiding it because you played better, but that's how Jeremy Bernard got you for 165 yards in that game because you just left things open. And right. in the one film review that we did, there would be so many times where you'd see 2 defenders that are almost shoulder to shoulder, and then there's guys sitting down in space. That's communication issues. That's right. That is just coverage breakdowns. You see poor technique in the secondary sometimes, like poor Jerry, man. He's having a hard time. Like, there was one play where he got beat deep, and it's like he did this weird whirly-woo to the outside where, like, if you flip your hips to the inside and run with the receiver, you don't get burnt. But he does this weird, like, barrel roll thing, and it was enough for the guy to get by him. And then I think it turned into a big play. And so a lot of that stuff can hopefully be cleaned up. I do think there are some personnel deficiencies in the secondary, as much as we love that secondary. Look, we run three safeties, and right now none of them are playing well. This right. just flat out. Earl Little has not shown up since he did in the Bama game. There's a lot of problems at safety right now where guys are just misaligned. They don't really look like they know what they're doing. The problem with that is when Miami has the speed to hurt you and Beck is a good enough quarterback to drop a dime downfield, man, if you do that and you bust those coverages, they're going to hurt you for that, right? And that's where you see the things with Shannon Dawson, right? Oh, they took away the run, but your corners have to cover, and they didn't. Like, first off, you should be playing that in the DB room this entire week, because that's an indictment
when
on you.
When he said that, I was like, oof.
Right. It looks like some of it looks like backyard football, where you just have undisciplined, just running around chasing guys. You don't really look like you have a plan. Like I said, you're bunched up on one side of the field and leaving 20-yard gaps on the other side of the field. These are things you just have to clean up. And what makes me so what makes it worse, right, is we don't affect the quarterback a lot, right? I think the defensive line did play better, but you don't affect the quarterback a lot. So when you have a questionable secondary and you don't affect the quarterback, that's a recipe for disaster. That is a dangerous game. We also can't defend bunch formations to save our life, right? We said that against Virginia. Now it's again against Miami. We don't understand that, like, there's so many times where we're trying to cross the traffic, and it just doesn't. I was going to do some film, but I didn't have time to pull the clip. I had a clip saved of Virginia where I was like, what are we doing? Like, you're coming from the outside trying to cross traffic, and you let the guy cross your face and he goes for a big gain. Same thing happened against Miami. Like, those are some things. But on the positive side, man, Amari Williams looks good.
He needs to be
a pass rush package guy. The Desir twins remain animals. Those guys are, I don't know how they're freshmen. They look like redshirt seniors the way they play. They are amazing. I thought Kevin Wynn played well for a freshman in his very first game action. I mean, he had a couple little things here and there, but man, this was the first time he ever suited up in college. I thought he played well, so getting him back in the rotation is good. Stephon Thompson is not bad at linebacker. I thought Blake Nicholson looked pretty good too. Elijah Herring should be put on a milk carton after the Bama game, because I don't know what happened to him. He just went missing. He's just not playing to the level we thought he was going to after Bama. You know, we talked about how good those linebackers played. And the other thing I will say with the DBs is, man, we have so many highly touted DBs in that secondary. It might be time to give somebody else a look. And I think that's why you saw Shamar Arnaud was an or next to Edwin Joseph on the depth chart this week, because you got to find some answers, right? I think at this point, if some guys aren't doing things, it's time to start trying somebody different, because again, the communication and the assignments and the alignments on the back end is just unforgivable. And Mike Norvell even said in his press conference that he was pissed off at some of those things, because it's something that showed up against Virginia as well. But my last thoughts on this game, because I know we got to get into Pitt, man, is, like you said, penalties, turnovers, and lack of execution is absolutely killing you right now. And that's football, though. That's the hard part, right? Yep. It's not a talent issue. It's not an effort issue. I think this team is playing hard. It's just the fundamentals are killing you. And when you go against them, like you said, you can do that against East Texas A&M and Kent State, maybe a Wake Forest or a Stanford, and get away with it because you're just better.
Right.
But if you do that against a Miami, you do that against a Virginia, it's going to kill you. And this is some of the same stuff that has showed up now 2 weeks in a row. Some of it was against Alabama. But like I said, you're five games in. You really don't have any more room for error. You're 2 weeks away from a bye week where you can kind of clean that stuff up. But, man, I mean, you got to clean those things up. You cannot have six turnovers in 2 weeks. You cannot have missed tackles. You cannot have this many blown assignments. And, you know, when we get ready to talk about Pitt here and you talk about the secondary, guess who passes the ball 65% of the time?
Yep.
So you need that secondary to have a much better week. So any more final thoughts, and then we'll talk about Pitt.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you in your assessment. I thought the DBs just really looked, you know, for a lot of the parts, just – you know, on that big play on in the Miami second drive and the big play there, you know, the twisty Lou that that Jerry does. We need Jeremiah.
Like you said, we need Jeremiah back.
We need Jeremiah back, man. Cause yeah, Jeremiah wouldn't have let that happen. Jerry's over here just going to the circus and everything. Like what are we doing, bro? Literally. Yeah. And then, but part of that also too, I looked at that film was that, you know, the safety on that side of the field, at the snap of the ball, he steps up. And then when Carson Beck is clearly in the passing mode, he takes another step forward. What are you doing? You should have bailed a long time ago to get back there. That inside route should not have been open that way, right? I mean, you look at some of the – I think you and I were standing next to each other, and I think I called out their last touchdown. What did I tell you? I said, look, they're running that tight formation again. It's going to be a flood concept, and he's going to hit them underneath – and watch our tackling. And what did he do? He did exactly what I said he was going to do. He flood concept to the boundary side of the field, which is the short side of the field. Tony caught the ball and then just zipped through our defense like mac and cheese without the cheese. And boom, he was in the end zone. And so I know from what I understand of Tony White, he couldn't have been happy with that. There's so many alignment and assignment issues on this side of the ball that had to be cleaned up as well. I didn't think the linebacker played as bad as you may have perceived them to be. I thought they did a little bit better job in coverage. I thought they fit their gaps most of the time. Obviously, they were able to stop the run there in that. And then under, I thought some of the underneath stuff was just some of the dressing that Miami put on that, but I just really thought I thought the defensive line played better than what we thought. It's hard to get pressure on Carson Beck. Miami had a lot of short passing, and when they had when they were going to go to deep concept, they went to max protection, and so yeah, that's going to make it hard, especially when you're not blitzing more than, you know, 4 to 5 people, and we didn't blitz as much as I thought we would have in this game. But the secondary really was the disappointing thing. That's why I asked the question. I said, I don't know which defense is showing up here. And while we got better run defense, our pass defense got worse. So who knows?
Yeah. I just think that you've got to clean some of these mistakes up when you're talking about teams that are good enough to expose you for that. I mean, that Tony kid is legit, man. Yeah. He is good for a freshman.
He's only a 3-star.
I don't know how. I mean, that's crazy, right? And so that's the thing, man, is like you can't make mistakes against good teams like that. And frankly, it shouldn't be that bad in week 5 or in game 5. And so you have got to find a way to clean some of these things up because you got some good passing teams coming up, you know, especially the one this week that we're about to talk about. But I don't think it was as bad as maybe we thought it was.
Correct.
You know, maybe some aspects it wasn't as good as we thought it was. But I think a lot of the stuff is correctable. It's just, will it get corrected? Because it's now 2 weeks in a row that we've seen those things. Most of it, though, man, like I said, it's being on the same page. It's communication. It's knowing what you're doing, where to be at, knowing where your help is, having your help actually be there when you think it's there. That's a lot of the stuff. And then Tommy on the offense, man, if you just quit pressing and take what they give you and stop trying to win the game by yourself. Hopefully Michael Pettis comes back. I think you'll be okay if you just stop turning the daggone ball over and getting dumb penalties. You stop doing that. You know, I don't know that I'll go as far what Tommy said about, I don't think anyone's beat us, we beat ourselves. I'll give you that against Virginia. I'm not going to buy that against Miami, but I also
think Miami don't helped think you.
Exactly. I also don't think you helped yourself against Miami for sure. Like you probably would have lost the game regardless because they're just better right now, but you certainly didn't help yourself. So,
I don't think they would have won, but that would have been, they had every opportunity to win the game. They could have been in that game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's part of football, right? The better team on that day was the team that executes. It's at least we can say, like we said, man, it wasn't necessarily like you just got physically whipped the entire game.
Right.
It's they looked better coached on that day, and they looked like they knew what they were doing a little bit better. And that's where the results went. And then not only that, but you add that to the turnovers and the penalties, and that's how the game gets ugly, right? You played bad against a good team who also played a cleaner game than you. And that's where things really start to get out of hand. But you didn't quit. You fought back. And again, I'm not here for moral victories, but after last year, that team quit a lot. And so at least you have the fight. that you hope you can bring back this week. So let's talk about this Pitt game. Now, before we do that, Michael, if you are going to be at this Pitt game, or maybe you're just tired of throwing out your lucky shirts, well, guess what? You need to get another one, and you should do that at Alumni Hall FSU. So if you're going to be in Tallahassee for this game, 1415 Timber Lane Road is the location. You can shop online at alumnihall.com, navigate over to the FSU page, and make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. I went and got some nice stuff there while I was down there at the Miami game. Wintertime is coming up. I know that probably feels different for me up here in Charlotte than it is for you guys down there in Florida. It's been like in the 50s here. So maybe you need some long sleeves. Go check them out. They got everything you need. Again, save 10% with code SPEAR. Appreciate you guys supporting them and for them supporting us. Now, let's talk about this game, Michael. 3-2 Florida State, number 25 in the country. Ooh, boy, we hanging on to that ranking by a thread. And now Pitt is also 3-2. You both only have one Power 4 win coming into this. Theirs is against Boston College. Yours is against Alabama. So yours is much better than their one Power 4 win. It is a noon game on ESPN. Florida State is a 10.5-point favorite. That is up from the opening of 9.5. The over-under is 58.5 points. That means if you break that down, Florida State would be a 34-24 winner in this game. They are 0-1 on the road. They did lose to Virginia. Now, how they got here, 61-9 versus Duquesne, 45-17 against Central Michigan. You know we don't talk about the games that don't matter. Game three was their first loss, 31-24 in overtime at West Virginia. That is a rivalry game, so you know those kind of – anything goes in that. But that's also the coming off of a game where West Virginia lost to Ohio. And yeah. I also, on Friday night when we got to Tallahassee, I watched them play BYU. West Virginia's not good, man. They're 2-4. They are rotating. I think they said they've used like five quarterbacks or something like that. I know Rich Rod's trying to fix that thing and bring back the glory days, but man, they have been blown out two times in the last three games prior to beating Pitt. So this was a kind of a head-scratching loss. West Virginia did put up 434 yards, 174 yards on the ground, the most allowed by Pitt so far this season.
Yep.
We're going to talk about that rush defense here in just a minute. That's a pretty daggone good rush defense they got going on so far. They did hold Pitt to only 46 rushing yards, 1.4 yards per carry. Pitt had 14 penalties for 118 yards, and West Virginia did get 6 sacks in that game. So, man, they did lose in overtime. They were still competitive in that game for kind of playing a rough game, but that West Virginia team's not good. So that was a game I thought Pitt – I remember that game coming off of the Ohio game. I was like, I think Pitt's going to win that one. I was surprised to see them lose.
Yeah, I think I said, too, that I said something to the effect of like, yeah, but those rivalry games, especially against Pitt, West Virginia, they are nasty. They do not like, for some reason, they do not like
each other. Isn't it the backyard brawl or something?
Yeah, it's the backyard brawl. I remember watching that as a kid with the white kid that played at West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
What was his name? I can't think of his name. I know they
have Steve Slayton.
Steve Slayton, all those guys. Yeah. And when West Virginia got to number two in the country, I remember watching that Pitt game. And I just thought,
Pat White,
that's what it was. Yeah,
that was always the guy you played with on video games,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Because he could run, you know.
Yep.
But I always felt like that. While I thought Pitt would win the game, I just thought, man, I don't know, that's just a tricky game for Pitt because that rivalry is always so weird. But yeah, it was a shocker because they were heavily. I think it was like 15-20 points, if I remember correctly, that game. Yeah. The line on that, the spread on that game, it's just uncharacteristic of what you saw there. And what they ended up doing is switching. I know we're going to talk about this. They end up switching quarterbacks, you know, and going to the freshmen. So, interesting season.
This feels like 07. We thought last season was crazy. This season has taken the cake by far. But then you have game four. They take two straight losses. They lose 34-27 to Louisville at home. And I was actually watching some of this game before we came on here to record. It was a pretty even game stat-wise. Louisville had 392 yards. Pitt had 339. Neither team ran for over 100 yards. Some of the things in this game, one touchdown for Pitt was on a pick six, so only 20 offensive points in that game. One Louisville touchdown was on a muffed punt by Pitt that Louisville got inside the five-yard line. And there was some ACC reffing going on in that one. It was a kick catch interference that they did not call. I would have probably stormed the field because it was such a bad call. They said he got blocked into the guy. It was bad. But anyway, Pitt was gift wrapping this game for Louisville. So you had that one. Then they dropped a punt. The punter drops the snap inside the 25. Pitt gets it there. So you got basically two gifted touchdowns. Now, you still could have stopped them. They went down and scored, though. But that game, you know, when you talk about Louisville scoring 34 points, 14 of those points, the drive started inside the 25. One started inside the five. Pitt did jump out to a 17-point lead in the first quarter, then gave up 17 unanswered and was held scoreless in the second half. The difference in this game, Michael, was Pitt had five turnovers. Louisville only had one. But here's the thing, man. This does speak, even though they lost to the Pitt team, even though you had five turnovers, you only lost by a touchdown. You know, even in that West Virginia game, as maybe you didn't play the cleanest game that you wanted to, it was still a 31-24 loss in overtime. So this is why I always say Pitt is a tough out, man, because even in their two losses, they were right there in each game. That's not a team that typically gets blown out, right? Even last year, I think they had Clemson on the ropes at home. But then, you know, give me some thoughts on that Louisville game, and then we'll talk about the BC game. I know it was a blowout, but we got to talk about it because that's our only sample size that we have with the freshman quarterback. But sure, I don't know if you got to watch that Louisville game or not, but, man, what did you have any takeaways from that one?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch the Louisville game, but I did catch some highlights of it. And I just thought that, you know, this is the Pitt we know, right? That they'll go out and they'll perform. And then when they get to the difficult meat of their schedule, they typically begin to fall apart. And so when I saw that, I remember seeing the highlight and I just thought, yeah, that's the Pitt we know. That's what it's been. Yeah. I mean, last year they started 7-0. A lot of their schedule was pretty, you know, I think the Notre Dame game, right? They won that game last year, right? Against Notre Dame. And so, like, that was like, oh, maybe Pitt is real. But then they started getting into that. And the last five games of the season, they just kind of fell apart again. And so, but I think what they realized is that the quarterback they had, at least offensively, wasn't as effective as they needed to be. And this, again, led them, what was another data point for them to go ahead and make the change when they played Boston College to the freshman.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what's crazy is that team was actually they were 7-0 when they started last year with Holstein at quarterback. And so I don't know what happened. He got hurt and missed the last six games, and that's why they ended up going 0-6. But then you fast forward to that BC game, man. Again, it's really hard to gauge what to expect because we only have a one game sample set for the freshman quarterback, and it was against a just butt cheeks BC team, man. I know Bill O'Brien has got to be missing Tommy Castellanos right now. They are 1-4. They're not good, man. They lost to Stanford by 10 points, but this was by far their worst loss of the season, right? 48-0 with 2 minutes left in the game. They got a garbage time touchdown just to get on the board. Now, they did start freshman quarterback number 6. I'm probably going to say this wrong. This is that Northeastern quarterback name, Mason Heinstuhl. I'm probably saying that wrong, but I don't know if you
I'd say Heinschill.
Well, we'll go with Mason. How about that? We'll go. number 6. And man, he lit Boston College up in his first game. So, man, again, this is the one thing, like, everybody's got these daggone good freshmen, man. I'm just ready to see this for us once in a while. We can't develop a quarterback to save our life, and Pitt just pulls freshmen off the bench every single year. I don't get it. But he lit them up, man. 30 of 41, 73.2% completion percentage, 323 yards, 4 touchdowns through the air, 8 attempts on the ground, 45 yards sack adjusted, 14 pressures, 2 sacks on the day. Pitt had 31 first downs to only 11 for Boston College, 503 yards to 216. BC was held to only 27 rush yards, 1.1 yards per carry. They've only rushed for over 100 yards in one game this season. They had 56 yards against Stanford. BC had 3 turnovers, but Pitt had 8 penalties. The point of that is Boston College sucks, but this freshman does not. And so at least on initial look, right, it'll be interesting to see what he does against a better defense. Now, our defense has not been playing well.
Right.
But it's better than what Boston College brings to the table. And so for his very first game, man, first off, one thing, you bring in a freshman off the bench and you let him throw it 41 times. They are not scared to let him throw the ball. And so we'll share some thoughts on him as well coming up when we talk about the offense here. But, man, I mean, they absolutely smoked Boston College with the new quarterback. And so maybe now you see why they made the change.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they brought him in and he was a spark. Now, again, that spark came against little Sparky of Boston College. I mean, I watched the game film of that. The Boston College didn't put up much opposition to Pitt's offense or to against Pitt's defense, honestly. I mean, they couldn't really do much. You saw a lot of what Pitt loves to do defensively, their schemes, which we'll get into as well. But that quarterback, I mean, he's a little go-getter. He's a little, you know, Speedy Gonzalez. He can scramble. He can move. He's got a good arm. He's got a decent arm there. And we'll get into all that. So I just thought, you know, even though that's our most recent data point, it was really kind of hard to take a lot away from it, except for, wow, Boston College is massively overmatched in this game.
Michael, why is it that we always play teams when they're good, and then when they're terrible, we never get to play them? And Boston College last year, I mean, like I said on another one, they started 5-1 last year. They're 1-4 this year. You know, you just look at some of the teams, it's like, why don't we? NC State, we always play them when they're a 9-1 team. The one time they looked terrible last year, we didn't get to play them. Like, I don't know what that is, man.
Cal last year. They weren't good.
That's also true. I just like, every time we play them, they're good. But when we talk about this offense, 41 points per game, 12th in the country against Power Four teams, that number only drops to 33. So their offense is pretty legit. But here's the thing, right? When you talk about this and the difference of resume so far, this is where I look at Florida State and I go, okay, I understand you've lost some games, but you've also played Alabama, who's a national title contender, right. Miami, who's a national title contender, and Virginia, who's playing way above their head, top 20 in the country, 5-1 start. Right now, this Pitt team has only faced one scoring defense ranked in the top 100. They have played some stank defenses other than Louisville, who is at 48. So they have not faced the test that you have in any way, shape, or form. Passing offense, 307 yards per game, top 15 in the country. Like we said, they love to throw the ball. Rushing offense, 116 yards per game, 110th in the country, only 99 yards per game on average against Power Four. So good thing they can throw it, because right now they can't run the ball. Now, when you talk about third downs, 37% conversion rate, 94th in the country. Red zone, 89%. They have scored on 25 of 28 trips, 17 touchdowns, 8 field goals. Explosive plays, 25, 52nd on the season. And Michael, 23 of those passes, or 23 of those explosive plays over 20 yards came through the air, only 2 on the ground. They are top 20 in explosive pass plays. So this is going to be a test for that secondary that we just talked about has struggled the last 2 games, because Pitt really likes to throw the ball, and they're pretty darn good at it. Now, let's talk about this offense and the personnel too. This young quarterback, I'm assuming he's going to be the starter for Florida State. I don't think they're going to go back the other way. Man, he gets the ball out quick. He is very quick, very good release, quick release, smart decision maker for a freshman. But they also help him out, right? They give him a lot of short stuff, a lot of short throws. I mean, they don't make him try and do things that he's not going to excel at. In this Boston College game, 7.3% of his throws were over 20 yards. 10 to 19 yards was 22%, 51.2 for 0 to 9 yards, and 14.6 for behind the line of scrimmage. So 66% of his passes went for under 10 yards. So again, they are smart about what they're doing. They're not going to make that freshman try and throw the ball downfield a whole lot. They're going to let him get it out quick. They're going to avoid that pressure. Again, this is the same things that we saw against Virginia and Miami, which kind of makes you nervous. They do like tempo, 71 snaps per game, 65% pass, 35% run. So, Michael, we're going to talk a little bit more about the offensive line and their skill positions, but, man, just give me some overall thoughts on that offense and what you've seen from that freshman quarterback in the first game. I know it wasn't against a good Boston College team, but, man, regardless, he balled out.
Because, like all the stats prior to that game don't matter, because it's a different quarterback running the show. And so I threw out all that stat, and I just focused in on the Boston College game. And I just thought this offense just looked better with him. It just looks better. It looks more cohesive. It looks like they know what they're doing. They understand him. They understand how they want to use him, how they want to use the skill players in the offensive line, and what they want to do and how they want to spread you and move. And it just looked really good. Again, I get it. It was against Boston College. Terrible defense. But we said that about Virginia and certain NC State defenses and terrible defenses. And we'll look what they did to Florida State. And until we can see whether or not this defense has an opportunity to improve in the secondary, I'm not going to take any offense as even with the freshman back there. And this offense reminds me a lot. I texted you. I said, this offense reminds me a lot of Virginia and the way they like to run things. They don't have a great running game, as you said, but they will chuck that ball around. They will make quick throws for him. They will the ball will get out very quickly. They don't mind throwing in the middle of the field there because they trust their receivers there. And they'll just keep dinking and dunking you until you come up, and then they'll try to hit you over the top with that, especially with their run game not working.
Yeah, it really does remind me a lot of Virginia's offense, right? And they kind of made your defense look silly. And so you're going to have to strap it up and come to play for this because, like I said, I feel like they understand their personnel really well, and they don't try and do too much. They try and do the same things we just talked about we wish Tommy would do. Take the easy stuff. Now, this offensive line up front, I'm not going to say that they're great, right? When you look at some of the numbers here, they're 102nd in pass block efficiency. They have allowed 12 sacks so far, 90th in the country. Six of them came in one game. They're averaging 3.79 yards per carry, which is 104th in the country. So it's not a bad offensive line. Pitt usually has good trench play, but it's not great either. But you don't have to be when the quarterback gets the ball out that fast. Now, when you talk about that quarterback, he does kind of get some happy feet under pressure and scrambles pretty quick when pressure gets back there. But that's a freshman. He's kind of just feeling things out, right? He's probably not comfortable sitting back there in the pocket for too long. Now, he's not super fast, but when I watched him, he's like that just slippery type of runner. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to beat you in a track meet, but, man, he's just hard to get on the ground. He's hard to tackle. One of the things that I think he just really is good at, man, is – he is good at avoiding pressure and throwing it out of bounds if you're going to get a sack. Like, he's really smart with the ball for a freshman in some ways. Now, there are some other ways, right? His deep ball isn't the most accurate. And one thing I did see in this game that could be some opportunities for Florida State, and I'm sure the coaches have probably got on him about this. Michael, what's the one thing they tell you not to do as a quarterback? Throw across your body.
Yep.
That joker will run out of the pocket and just, let her rip. He loves to throw across his body on the run. And so there's going to be some opportunity for interceptions in this game. But, I mean, again, he is he's smart and he's efficient, but you can tell he's a freshman at times. He does take some chances there. And the thing is, man, they're going to make you tackle in space, right? Yep. The way they dink and dunk the ball. West Virginia had 14 tackles. Louisville had 10. BC had 18 missed tackles. We know Florida State had 15 against Virginia. Like we said, man, they like to throw it horizontally. Their receivers, when we talk about them, I wouldn't say – it's kind of like Virginia, right? I wouldn't say that they're special, but, man, they are really good at finding holes in space and making catches and getting yards after catch. They don't really create a lot of separation vertically, but they will eat you up underneath, which, again, is what we saw a lot the past 2 weeks. Hicks, number three, and Kenny Johnson, number two, have both had a 100-yard game against the Power 4 defense this year. So I'm not saying they don't have anything at receiver. It's just not what you saw against Miami. So give me some thoughts on the skill positions, then we'll talk about the running back.
Yeah, I would agree with you on the wide receivers. It's not that I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, they aren't talented. They're talented. Obviously, they're playing D1 Power 4 football. They're talented.
Right.
But they're not special. There's no Jeremiah Smith back there. There's no Ryan Williams. There's no Jermaine Bernard. There's none like that.
Malachi Toney.
Yeah. Three-star, you know, tearing you up in the middle of the field. But they are consistent. If you play off of them like we love to do, and you know how much Jesse probably got so sick of me saying, why are we playing 10 yards off? Why are we playing 10 yards off
for real
in the game? Because I said that so much. If you play that, they'll take that all day. He'll take that all day because they'll catch the ball. They're pretty good with their hands. They're going to catch the ball. And I think their running back is nothing special. They are going to run that running back motion or that tight end motion, that jet motion that we like to run. So you're going to see a lot of that as well too. But their run blocking is not very good.
No,
and so you should be able to stop the run. The issue is going to be the passing offense in this game.
Yeah. What makes me nervous is if you see the same thing that happened against Miami, where you decide to take away the run because they're not good at it. And then you can't cover on the backside. Like, I would almost do the opposite in this one. I would be like, we're going to take away the pass, and I'm going to let you do what you're not good at, and that's run the ball. Now, when you talk about their running back number eight is a hard runner, but he is not really a special guy. 175 yards, 3.9 yards per carry, three touchdowns. doesn't break a lot of tackles, but he falls forward. Mm-hmm. Number 25 is their scat back, kind of like our Jalen Lucas. He's a smaller guy, but 134 yards, 5 yards per carry, 2 touchdowns, 4 runs of 10-plus this season. And the thing is, man, I will say this. When he comes into the game, like, he's going to get the ball, right? He's played 28 snaps this season. He has 27 rushing attempts. So when number 25 is in the game, he's getting
guaranteed.
The ball.
He's getting the ball.
Guaranteed. Now, I will say this. Desmond Reed is their feature back. He has been out the past 2 games with injury. He got injured against West Virginia. Look, he put up 968 yards last year, including 4 games with over 120 yards. Now, 2 of those were against Toledo and Kent State, but we'll have to wait for the injury report to come out. I don't know if he's going to be available for this game. If he is available for this game, that is going to be something to watch. Desmond Reed, he is their feature back. So maybe he can just miss 1 more game. I wouldn't be mad at that. Now, I don't know that they're going to play Holstein. I highly doubt it. It sounds like the freshman is the hot hand. They're going to ride it. If Holstein does end up getting playing time, he did get benched. He has thrown a pick in every game he has started so far, 2 against Louisville. He's had 5 turnover-worthy plays against West Virginia, sub 60% completion percentage against West Virginia and Louisville. He is more of a runner and has a pretty nice deep ball, but he puts the ball in harm's way a lot, takes a lot more sacks, which is probably why he got benched. Just thought I would give you guys a quick tidbit there on Holstein if you were to see him. A little bit more of a gambler, but not as good as the freshman, man. So, I mean, I think they're going to ride the hot hand there. But let's turn over to the defense and talk about what Pitt's going to bring. And here's the thing, man. Pat Narduzzi has been there forever.
Forever.
One thing you can count on, death taxes and Pitt having a good defense, right? Narduzzi was a Broyles Award winner, I believe, at Michigan State. So, like, man, he's always had a good defense, without a doubt. Right now, they're allowing 19.6 points per game, 37th in the country, only 24 points per game against Power 4 teams. But they have only faced one scoring offense ranked in the top 50, which was Louisville. Their pass defense has given up 227 yards a game, which is 81st. So their pass defense has not been good, 263 versus Power 4 teams. So it's kind of – I'm already thinking I don't love the matchups in this game, Michael, right? It seems like their weakness is to throw the ball. We want to run the ball. Their best defense is to stop the run. And that's what we want to do, because when you talk about that rush defense, it's the number 2 rush defense in the country, only allowing 65 yards per game, 85 versus Power 4 teams. Now, here's the asterisk to that. They have not faced a Power 4 rush offense ranked in the top 100. Florida State still got a pretty daggone good rush offense. I know they didn't do quite what they wanted to do against Miami, but this defensive line ain't that defensive line.
Right.
And so you hope you can run the ball against them, but they have only given up 100 rushing yards 1 time this season, and that was to West Virginia, who does have mobile quarterbacks, so maybe that helps you out there.
Right.
They forced 7 turnovers so far this season, 3 fumbles, 4 interceptions. They got 16 sacks, which is 12th in the country, 7 versus Power 4, still top 20, so they're good at creating pressure. Now, we'll talk about it in a little bit. It's more so how they bring pressure than the defensive line and things like that. Third down defense, they're 32nd in the country. Red zone defense, not so good, man. 93.8% scoring percentage allowed, 115th. They've given up 15 scores on 16 trips, 11 touchdowns, 4 field goals, and they have allowed 16 explosive plays, which is 33rd in the country. 15 through the pass, only 1 through the rush. So he has making me nervous a little bit with the way we match up against them. Now, let's talk personnel. This defensive line, man, they are small. They are undersized. Like, one of the packages that I watched, it seems like their speed group, every defensive lineman, 6'2", 265, 6'2", 280, 6'2", 280, 6'3", 260. They are small. You have a 45-pound advantage over this defensive line. But, man, I'm going to say one thing about that defensive line. They are small, but they are feisty. They play hard. They do not take plays off. One that I will say you need to watch out for is number 55. He's almost like a Walmart brand Braden Fisk, right? Like, I don't think he's as good as Braden Fisk. Maybe we don't play that for them in the locker room. Like, I don't think he's Braden Fisk, but he stands out on film. 6'3", 295. He's a bigger guy. Yeah. He's the best defensive lineman they have. He's the highest graded per PFF. He tore Boston College up. I mean, he can get off blocks. He can do a lot of stuff, man. Number 55 is the one to watch out for. But it's a small defensive line. But, man, at the same time, their linebackers are so freaking good that this defensive line doesn't have to be the most effective, because they're really not, right? They're really not the most effective defensive line. But, man, that they don't get a ton of push, but their linebackers are very solid and they clean up a lot. They play downhill. They're very physical. They like to use simulated pressures and bring guys off the edges. The secondary, I will say, they're not the best in pass coverage, but, man, they're good in run support. They come downhill and they clean things up quick. You can find holes in the coverage, but this is a Pat Narduzzi defense, right? They're well-coached and they're physical. Again, you have a size advantage up front, but, man, their linebackers are pretty darn good, and you can tell why they don't give up a lot of rush yards.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I wrote down that defensive line is like a fire ant hill at an elementary school playground, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just, you know, they're so small, but you get that thing going and them kids are running for their life. Like, they are just feisty, to use your word. Gosh, they just disrupt. They get skinny. If you don't know what that term means, it's like they will slip a gap, meaning they'll make themselves small to try to get through. They shoot gaps all the time. They blitz from everywhere, including your grandma's left closet. They will send somebody. And it's not, and again, when you know, oftentimes fans think when we say blitz that you're sending 7, 8, 9 people. No. They will literally have 4 lined up, and then they'll bring a 5th person just from somewhere where the offensive line didn't account from. You saw a little bit of that if you go back and watch the last weekend's game against Miami. Miami did that. They kept bringing the safety from different angles that the offensive line didn't always account for. Well, pack your bags, because Pat Narduzzi and them, they're going to do that a lot. They're going to bring linebackers. They're going to bring 6. They're going to shoot 4 and then loop them around or stunt them, which is, you know, one will come this way and then come back around the other way. I mean, they are trying to create havoc with what is a, as you said, a smaller defensive line. I even saw a play against Boston College, Jesse, where they only had 2 legit D linemen and everybody else were defensive backs that they use in a speed rush attempt to get to the quarterback. Like, they will do all kinds of exotic looking things to disrupt you. And so you're going to have, Tommy is going to have opportunities to throw the ball into good spaces, wide open spaces. The issue will be, can he be protected? Can he be patient enough to stand in the pocket and take what the defense gives him? If you want to know one of my early keys to this game, it's take what the defense gives you, right? Take what no hero ball here, because you're going to feel like you need to do hero ball. But with this defense, can you take what they give you?
Yeah, it's funny, because when I watched some of the tape, you know, we were watching the All-22s, and I was like, is this like a speed package? Do they have 4 defensive ends on the field at the same time? And it's like, no, that's just who they use. They're small. They use. Like you said, they're so active. And their linebackers are very good. I mean, they are disciplined. They have good eye discipline. They trigger well. They go downhill. And they love to bring pressure off the edges. So blitz pickup is going to be huge. I looked it up. They blitzed over 40% in the past 2 games. So they're going to come at you. I mean, I think that's sometimes one of the things I'd like to see Florida State do is, like, maybe if you're undermanned sometimes, you just be aggressive. And that's a
cost calling havoc.
Card. Right. And that's a calling card of Pat Narduzzi's defense. So, again, they haven't faced a lot of good offenses, so this is going to be a challenge for them, because regardless of what you saw in the last game, Florida State still has a good offense. They just got to stop turning the ball over and getting stupid penalties. But again, like you said, man, taking what the defense gives you and being smart on your calls and blitz pickups in this game is going to be huge, because they're going to try and throw a wrench into your plans. But let's talk about some final thoughts and predictions here. We'll do some keys as well. And so when we talk about this one, man, when we look overall at this game, they have not been tested nearly as much as you have, but they have the same record. They're a tough out. Even in their losses, they kept it close. So you're going to have to work for it. This is a Pitt team. Like I said, man, they typically do not lose big. Isn't this the only team in the ACC that you actually have a losing record against, I think?
Correct.
So, man, I mean, they're going to make you work for it. And here's the thing. Transitive properties in college football rarely work as a one-to-one comparison, because that's teams match up differently and matchups are bigger than anything else in college football. With that being said, they lost a close game at home to Louisville. Virginia just won a close game at Louisville in overtime by almost the same exact score, 34-27 to 30-27. UVA beat FSU at home in double overtime. So it would at least seem like the degree of separation between these teams is really not that far apart. Like Pitt right. could be comparable to Louisville and Virginia. So you're kind of getting that same level of team there. And with where you're at, you're probably not that far ahead at this point in time because you lost to Virginia. So again, transitive properties don't always carry over. But I think it just shows you that this is why I expect this to be a good game. Now, I think Florida State does have a talent edge, and they are at home. I also think one factor of this game is this is a must-win game for Florida State. Like we said before, man, every game is a must-win game for every team. But I think they know this game is really big for Mike Norvell's tenure, for this team. I've said it before, I think this game is a fork in the road for this season. If you lose to a 3-2 Pitt team and you drop to 500 on the season and 0-3 in the ACC, man, this season might come unraveled, right? I just think it's going to be tough to recover from that. And you got to make that crazy, weird trip to the West Coast next week, too. You need this win in the worst kind of way. And for you know, better or worse, Mike Norvell has sometimes had a trouble stopping the bleeding where one loss turns into two turns into three. So this has to be a get right game without a doubt. Right. But man, at the end of the day, I think Florida State can win this game. And before I get into some keys, man, give me some final thoughts and then we'll share our keys and we'll do a score prediction.
Yeah, listen, I think at the end of the day, as we said, this is an important game. This is a fork in the road kind of game. Not kind of game. It is a fork in the road game because right. you're at 3-2. This was a game on the season we said you should win, right? If 8-4 is the goal, you got to win this game. You don't win this game, now you're sitting at 3-3, and whatever I think the last two losses took the Bama win momentum, and basically it's like it's not all the way gone, but you know, like at the sink where the water is just kind of all like it's like coming down, you can see clearly the bottom of the sink there. That's what if you lose this game, all that water goes out, the Bama win momentum is gone, and now you get apathy. And You think the pitch forks were out this week, lose the Pit and see what happens. I'm just being real. Now, again, I love Mike. I want Mike to succeed. I'm going to support him to the end of the season. But you think they were bad this week, lose the Pit.
You're 100% right because, you know, you beat Alabama and we're like, okay, we know it's in there.
Yep.
But then you haven't looked like the team that beat Alabama the last 2 weeks. But you could also say, all right, well, it was a top, you know, they weren't ranked at the time. But this Virginia team looks pretty good, and it was a double overtime loss on a short week on the road. Miami is the number three team, and now I think they're number two in the country. They look really daggone good. Pitt is 3-2 with one Power Four win. You get them at home, you had better win this game. And I mean better win this game, because if you lose this game, I might be out on Mike Norvell at that point, because you just can't, man. You just can't. Right. And then, again, you got that tricky trip out to the West Coast. Then you're into a bye week. Like, you got to win this game. And so I think Florida State knows that. But, again, I think it's going to be a tough game because Pitt is never an easy out. They're a well-coached team, and they don't typically make a lot of stakes. Even in the 5-turnover game, two of those were kind of special teams blunders that typically don't happen. So my keys for this one, Michael. First off, play a complete game.
Right.
The defense let you down versus UVA. The offense let you down versus Miami. Can both sides show up for another game? Like the Bama game was your best game by far. The other two games didn't really tell you much. But since then, you have not played a complete game on both sides of the ball.
Right.
The second one, play a clean game. 6 turnovers in the past two games, costly penalties in both games, missed tackles in both games. If you clean that stuff up, we're probably undefeated right now. Right. But you haven't, so we're not. Don't let that be the reason you lose a third straight game. Play good on both sides of the ball and play a clean game. And then the third one, man, is coverage has to be better this week. The secondary has to be better. Pitt hasn't run the ball well this season at all. You were pretty successful at taking the runaway versus Miami. But then you wet the bed on the back end of the defense. And Pitt is going to throw the ball. Like I said, they throw it 65% of the time. The secondary has got to step up. If you can keep the secondary from giving up big chunk pass plays and you can play a complete game and not turn the ball over six times and like you or three times like you have in the both in the last two games, I think you will come out on top. But again, when you're talking about a well-coached, scrappy team, if you put the ball in the, in on the ground, if you throw, you know, interceptions, if you have one side that doesn't show up, Pitt will beat you. They are right. good enough to beat you.
Right.
So you got to play a complete game. You got to play a clean game. And that secondary has got to step up in this game.
Yeah, my keys are similar to yours and just as simple. Three keys. Number one, take what the defense gives you. Tommy, no hero ball. Don't need it. The defense is going to give you wide open shots, wide open lanes, wide open 4 or 5 yard digs, wide open, you know, 10 yard in routes, flood routes, all they're going to give that to you. Take what the defense gives you. You don't have to play hero ball today. Okay. Number two, alignment and assignment. But for the offensive line, make the right calls, know who's coming, be clear about it, right? You don't, you know, if you get to the line, I know you want to go hurry up, but if you're not clear on what's happening, man, slow it down. It's okay to do so.
Yeah.
Secondary, we've got to get the right alignment. We got to understand our assignments. We got to know if they're running bunches, if they got, you know, three wide receivers or they're running, you know, two wide receivers or a wide receiver, a tight end, and a running back, they're all in that power four kind of formation there. Know who's taking the inside, who's taking the flat, who's taking the long, right? Or the deep or the inside. Like, let's communicate. Let's be better about that. And number three, most importantly, protect the rock. Protect the rock. Florida State is likely, and I'll say it again. I'll say it till I'm blue in the face, and I can't turn blue, but I'll say it, is you would be 5-0 right now. I believe it. I strongly believe it. You could be 5-0 right now. If you six turnovers in the last two games. You don't have those six turnovers. You beat Virginia for sure, I believe.
Yeah.
And you're in the fourth quarter with a chance to win the game against Miami. Okay. Protect the rock.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds so simple to say just play basic football without a lot of mistakes. But if you do that, if you can run your base offense and your base defense and you just take care of the little things, this is a game that you should win. So, Michael, I'm finding it harder and harder to have faith that this team is going to get their mess together, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do think with everything that they know is on the line. Now, and I will say this is a sleepy noon game. The energy inside Doak coming off of two straight losses is probably not going to be what it has been for the previous games, right? You may see some empty seats in this game just because it's noon and you're coming off two straight losses. So you're going to have to bring your own energy in this game, right? Pitt is not a rival. Pitt is not some big name program, but that's exactly what they want. And they want it to be a quiet noon game where they can sneak up on you. But I do think Florida State bounces back because I think they know what is at stake in this game. I think they know they screwed up the last 2 weeks, and I think they pressed against really good teams. So as long as they don't play down to their competition, I think you'll be okay. And so I have Florida State winning this game 34-24 to get off the snide and to get back in the win column. And then, man, you just need it so bad. I think they go get it. I think it's going to be close. I think that spread's about right. It's been right the last couple games just about. So I got Florida State 34-24 in a close one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Jesse, as I look back on this season and I think about just what we've seen and what we've understood, you know, they have the big win against Alabama. Neither of us predicted that, though you felt better about that game than I did, right? Then obviously with East Texas A&M and Kent State, we both predicted them for them to win and win big. And what did they do? They won and won big. And then in the bye week, we predicted that they'd win the bye week. And what they do? They won the bye week, right?
It was close.
It was close. And then we said, hey, we feel confident about this Virginia game. They're going to go in there. They're going to take care of business because Miami's coming next. They're going to win. And they did not win. They did not win that game. In fact, they lost it in double overtime. Then against Miami, you felt good about that Miami game. You felt like there was just something that was there. And I said, I feel the other way. And you were wrong, and I was right. Well, Jesse, I got to tell you, man, I don't feel great about this game. Uh-oh. I got the feeling. But I think Florida State, dadgummit, they're going to bounce back, and they're going to do it. I'm going to go against my feeling, and I got Florida State winning 28-24.
Okay, you pulled a not so fast, my friend, with the great Lee Corso. Shout out Lee Corso.
Shout out Lee Corso.
I get it, man. I have a little bit of heartburn from the way we match up, right?
Yeah.
Just some of the things we talked about. They love to throw. We can't stop the pass. They
right.
stop the run well. That's what we like. That's our bread and butter. So I do get a little bit nervous about this game. To me, I think the biggest difference is who you've played versus who they've played. If you played their schedule, you're 5-0 for right. sure. I would bet on that. If they played your schedule, they're probably, 2-3. And yeah. so that's about where I think they would yep. be. So I think that's the difference, man. And so hopefully Florida State brings it this week and just plays a complete game and you cut out the mistakes. And you got nothing to look ahead to. You got Stanford on the backside of this. So, man, just come out and just play
winning football.
Can we see the team that we saw against Alabama just one yes. time? Just yes. one more time. So let's go get this win.
Multiple times.
Yeah, about 10 more times. Yeah, five more times or whatever, however many we got left. Seven more times. Florida State needs it. They need it bad. And we both think they get it. But I think it's going to be a tough, scrappy game, man. But it doesn't matter if you win by 1 or 100, it's still a win. So let's go, Noles. Let's get this one. And that's going to be it for this one, guys. Again, check out Alumni Hall FSU. Save 10% with Coach Spear. Drop a like and subscribe if you enjoy this content. Drop a rate and review on the podcast. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You guys do a great job of that. Like I said, again, grab your girlfriend's phone, your boyfriend's phone, your husband's phone, your mama's phone. Hit subscribe. They probably like Florida State. And if not, they can laugh at our stupid jokes anyway. So appreciate you guys, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.